Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Good morning, Los Angeles, and welcome to another edition of the Weekend Warrior Show. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai, 31 years, and I'm joined the brains behind the business, the great Steve Paulette, pulling the sound bites. What a show we have for you today. I'm so excited because my guest coming up at 7:15 is a world-class surgeon who specializes in thoracic surgery. Why would I pick Dr. Clark Fuller to come on with me this Saturday? Because I'm fascinated by the story and the journey of Brandon Ingram. Remember the baby Laker who's now an all-star in New Orleans? He had a career potentially ending diagnosis of a blood clot, but the blood clot was the secondary finding. As soon as the announcement came out last year that Brandon Ingram had a blood clot in his arm, causing the pain and limited motion to his shoulder, my phone started to buzz, and it was my good friend, Dr. Clark Fuller, going, "Robbie, he's got thoracic outlet syndrome." What exactly is that? That's what's causing it. He's going to need surgery, and he's going to be just fine. And sure enough, because of surgery, to manipulate the flow of his artery, getting it right in his right arm and shoulder, Brandon Ingram this year was an all-star. And I just love that story where we as surgeons can truly save the career. Only this is not orthopedic surgery. This is thoracic surgery, a whole nother field. And you're really going to enjoy my conversation with Dr. Clark Fuller. So stay tuned at 7:15. But it made me think all week because I love to connect the dots, my passions for art, sports, and surgery. Where do we see manipulating the flow? Kobe Bryant, he did it better than anybody, manipulating the flow of the game, particularly those alley-oop passes when number 8 Kobe Bryant to Shaquille O'Neal. That's a true flow. But what about in art, in life? Where do you see the savior of manipulating the flow to save the day? You're not going to believe this, but guess what I found? One of the greatest sights you will ever see, and I encourage you all to go visit. It's a bucket list to visit Niagara Falls. It's where Lake Erie goes into Lake Ontario. The Great Lakes pretty much go over the greatest waterfall in North America, the most powerful waterfall. Did you know that in 1969, Niagara Falls had surgery? They actually put a dam above it so they could fix it. What was the matter with it? It's so powerful that it throws over these giant rocks, these giant boulders. And they expected in 1969, if this keeps up, the erosion, which is about a foot a year, is actually going to make it just a lazy river again and not have this dramatic vertical drop because of the rocks. They've got to do something about the big rocks that got thrown to the bottom. So in 1969, the Army Corps of Engineers did surgery on Niagara Falls. I did not know this. That's why I love this show. You guys get to learn, but so do I. Wait till you hear this story about manipulating the flow of Niagara Falls. And I definitely want to do a Clapper vision for the coronavirus so that you understand how a virus works. Why is it different than in a bacteria that you can take antibiotics for and then the infection goes away? What is so different about a virus? You're going to need a Clapper vision, and it's going to involve carjacking. So stay tuned for that. I'll explain. You'll understand better how a virus works. But I want to talk right now. Listen to the story here about manipulating the flow. This is Tim Legler, ESPN's basketball expert on SportsCenter, talking about this year how powerful the baby Laker, Brandon Ingram, has become. And remember, this is after he has surgery on his artery to keep it from being pinched by a rib, an extra rib that he has.
But the Pelicans got Brandon Ingram, and Ingram is developing into a real star there in New Orleans.
Yeah, and Stan, I love this guy coming out. I thought it might take a few years when he came out of the draft. I thought it might take a few years to turn into this level scorer. I didn't even know if he could get to 25 a game. What he has done to his game and his ability now to add some strength and maintain his balance means that he can now hit that mid-range shot even when he's closing guarded. He can get to the rim and finish over that last line of defense.
Tim Legler in Yiddish is kvelling over the return of Brandon Ingram as an all-star. This is after surgery, manipulating the flow of blood down his right arm.
These were things he really struggled with early in his career because he just didn't have the physical strength to do it. You see now what this is. You've got a big-time 6'10" wing that can get his own shot anywhere on the floor, and he's averaging 25 points a game. Spectacular in this one, obviously, with 49 points, and just made big shot after big shot against a team in the Utah Jazz that has played as well as anybody over the last month.
How rewarding that must be for the surgeon. I was busy yesterday in surgery all day. Hip replacement, knee replacements. I even did a fascinating case of a 40-year-old who had two large rocks, speaking about Niagara Falls removing the rocks, floating in his knee. He couldn't straighten his knee. These had been there for years. Now his knee was all swollen, and it was really cool. I love this operation where I can go in with tiny little incisions and find those rocks and remove them so now his knee can straighten and bend and the swelling will go away. Just so cool to be a surgeon, to be able to change people's lives, to work on the machinery that God made. It doesn't get better than that. But this is what a patient sounds like when they're depressed, when their world is all after them. This is Brandon Ingram giving a news conference, press conference, when he's trying to describe what's happened with his blood clot. Now, recognize I just played how he's doing this year. So the ending of this story is beautiful. Thanks to surgery. Thanks to surgery that people like Clark Fuller do. But listen to Brandon Ingram talking about, I don't know what's happening.
Well, you know, when we were going through all these tests, I didn't think it would be something that serious. I just kind of woke up and my arm was kind of tight. Couldn't lift it over my shoulder. And I knew I was going to hear Luke's mouth talking about I was soft when I was coming to the gym. And I just came to the gym, did my normal routine every day, and was just feeling this little pinch under my armpit, and I was just trying to figure out what was wrong.
That's how it starts, small, just a little pinch. And then he can't lift his arm above his head.
The doctors did a couple tests, and they came back with the blood clot, and we just tried to see what procedure that we could do to help me get back as fast as I can, and right now the process is going good. I got rid of the blood clot. I got surgery underneath my armpit and right around my shoulder area, so everything is moving forward.
Everything's moving forward. How important is it that we help each other get better, which is now is certainly a time for that? What it meant to Brandon Ingram that the fans would come up to him and wish him well.
I've heard from the fans out in the open, just different people just telling me that they're praying for me to get better, hoping that I come back stronger. And that means a lot. That means a lot just because I think we get so caught up in so much of the negativity, and just to see the positive and see everyone around just saying positive things, I think that was good for me.
Brandon Ingram had to fight to get himself stronger.
That day that they said I had a blood clot that it was in, I knew I had to continue to fight, and I just felt like I was going to have good results.
And he did. He's an all-star this year. What about Niagara Falls? This is not static. What I'm going to play now is what it sounds like when you're standing right up next to this massive waterfall.
What you looking at? More water going over those falls than any place in North America. The power is hard to describe when you're even just standing right there. It started 20,000 years ago. Some glacier melted, created the Great Lakes, and they all assemble and go over these falls. Native American tribe called the Mohawks. Niagara in Mohawk means neck. This is the neck connecting those two great river, those two great lakes, Lake Erie and Lake Ontario. Here's the story of Niagara Falls.
Around 18,000 years ago, the falls didn't exist. They were formed when an ice sheet from the North Pole left behind vast areas of landscape, what we know today as North America. When the vast chunks of ice started to melt, the fall came into existence.
Wow.
When the glaciers melted, a considerable amount of water was sent into the Niagara River. It took a lot of time for the water to erode the cliffs, and the falls were formed. By the end of the 19th century, the world's first hydroelectric generating station was built near the falls. Soon it started producing electricity. Unfortunately, the electricity could only carry 300 feet, so everybody knew that improvements had to be made.
You know that car that Elon Musk calls a Tesla? Well, it's actually named after Nikola Tesla. And if it wasn't for Nikola Tesla, electricity would not be flowing through your radio right now.
Nikola Tesla was the man who made those changes. He found a way to send electricity long distances by using alternating current. Today, the Falls Power Plant produces more than 2 million kilowatts of power. The scientists wanted to see if it was possible to see what was going on behind the falls. They thought that if they could stop them from flowing, they could find out the mysteries behind them.
So first they stopped manipulating the waterfall by making electricity. Then they realized they better manipulate, they better do surgery on Niagara Falls because erosion is going to actually ruin it.
Tempering nature is a challenge, and many people wondered if what the scientists had planned was even possible. Was it possible to stop such a powerful force? Well, this might sound strange, but the amount of water changes at night. It's not something that happens naturally. It's actually a human factor. Local companies are allowed to take water from the falls, but only at night. During the 50s, the locals signed a treaty to take more water at night when there weren't so many tourists there, and they wouldn't notice a difference.
The whole thing is a manipulation.
According to the people of New York who visit Niagara Falls regularly, the falls have been experiencing change over time. These New Yorkers have noticed that every time a gallon of water goes down the cliffs, the falls lose a bit of their charm. It's believed the stones that accumulate at the bottom of the falls could cause problems in the future.
Erosion is going to ruin the falls.
They discovered that something had to be done with the accumulated rocks at the bottom of the waterfalls. They even contacted the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for their opinion on the matter. Nobody could come up with a good solution for the accumulated rocks, so they decided to shut down the falls. They were going to do it just temporarily, so that all the stones could be removed from the water.
Are you kidding me?
In the summer of 1969, over 1,000 trucks carried rocks and earth to the falls just to get them to stop flowing. The loads were dumped upstream of the waterfall for 3 days. A cofferdam was created and the falls stopped flowing. The water was redirected from there to Horseshoe Falls.
In order to work on your artery, like Dr. Clark Fuller has to, he's got to clamp the flow through that artery. That's in essence what they did in Niagara Falls. Instead of a clamp to stop the flow, they made a dam out of 1,000 trucks working for 3 days straight, dumping rocks. So that, lo and behold, the water stopped flowing over Niagara Falls.
The locals were really worried for a couple of reasons. First, they knew that you really can't control water. What would happen if the water was rerouted the wrong way, causing a significant flood? Also, they were worried about the tourists. What would happen if they failed to get the falls flowing again? Many locals made money from the tourists. If the falls stopped, the money would dry up as well.
The flow started again. But look at what they found when they shut the water off.
The tourists did stop visiting the falls that summer, obviously, because, well, the fall was blocked. But those who did show up, they got to see something that nobody will ever see again. They had an opportunity to take rocks and incredible coins from the Niagara Falls riverbed. The people who watched the waters over the falls drain, they saw skeletons in the water. It was unclear whether the skeletons belonged to animals who had drowned or people who had fallen in the falls at one point.
They found two people.
The fact the experts were able to stop the falls from flowing was incredible. Fortunately, the falls did start flowing again, and today the Niagara Falls are as incredible as ever. Had the experts not been able to stop the water so they could remove the stones back in 1969, we might have lost one of the greatest wonders of the world.
If thoracic surgeons had not operated on Brandon Ingram, he would not be an all-star this year. Manipulating the flow of life in general, this is what a thoracic surgeon does, and it's fascinating to me. We're going to learn a little bit more about it coming up next with the great Dr. Clark Fuller. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN. The number is 877-710 ESPN. I love her. Cry me a river. A river over you. The great Diana Krall. I saw her at the Hollywood Bowl. She came out in a black dress and gold shoes. She walked right to the end of the stage and said to the crowd, "You like my outfit? Good girl dress, bad girl shoes," and proceeded to sit down and just blow everyone's mind. What a beautiful voice. I'm so excited to talk to my next guest, the great Dr. Clark Fuller. Clark, thanks so much for getting up early to be with us.
My pleasure, Dr. Clapper.
So before we get into Brandon Ingram, and I just want to wet the whistle here, this is what he said in describing his symptoms of why he couldn't lift his arm above his head.
Well, you know, when we were going through all these tests, I didn't think it would be something that serious. I just kind of woke up and my arm was kind of tight. Couldn't lift it over my shoulder, and I knew I was going to hear Luke's mouth talking about I was soft when I was coming to the gym. And I just came to the gym, did my normal routine every day, and was just feeling this little pinch under my armpit, and I was just trying to figure out what was wrong.
And then he couldn't lift his arm above his head. Does that sound pretty typical for someone with thoracic outlet syndrome? You knew before anybody else that's what it was. You called me.
Yeah, it is a... There's a constellation of classic symptoms, and shoulder pain, particularly pain with bringing that arm or hand, rising it above the head, will produce pain in that joint. The swelling is because of the impingement or the pinching on the blood vessels that both supply blood and drain blood from the arm. Mm-hmm. But it was a fairly classic triad that not everybody with thoracic syndrome will describe.
Yeah, my professor, Dr. Ranawat, said the eyes don't see what the mind doesn't know. Speaking of that, how did you become a thoracic surgeon? Where did you grow up? What did your dad do for a living? Who are you?
My father was a rancher in Wyoming.
No way!
Yes. I grew up outside a little town out by Yellowstone Park called Cody, Wyoming. Oh, and we had several hundred acres and several hundred head of cattle. And working with those animals, I developed a desire, an appreciation for life and the balance of life. And I enjoy conversation, which is why I get up at 7:15 in the morning to talk with you. I didn't have a lot of conversation with my cows. So medical school became a natural. I also really enjoyed my pediatrician. I never minded to go see him. And as I'm articulated through med school and began to think about what I would become, thoracic surgery chose me. I really believe I didn't choose it. It appealed to the my sense of science, of correction, of intervention, of dealing with a highly integrated circuit, both the heart and the lungs, which are vital to life as we know it. So it is a tremendous science that offers surgical intervention to prove truly helpful.
Wow. What a story. That's amazing. What did your father think when you said, "I want to be a surgeon"?
I know that he thought I'm not as dumb as he thought I was. he was very proud. Very proud.
And your mom, did she work in addition or just raise the kids?
She was pretty busy with my brother and I and the rest of the ranch life. She was a very good mother at home with us.
And the connection between the two of us comes from a great nurse, one of my favorite nurses at Cedars, Donna Aiello. And she's the president of your fan club, probably president of my fan club, too. But what kind of surgeries are you doing? What is in the world of Clark Fuller as a thoracic surgeon?
That's a very good question. And there's usually some confusion around it. Because the word thoracic, people are not familiar with. And I have to remind them that it's not some period of time when there were dinosaurs. This is not to be confused with Jurassic. It's thoracic and involves the chest wall, the surrounding musculature, the ribs, the breastbone, the sternum, and then most importantly, the content that those structures protect, the underlying lungs, the blood vessels, the nerves, the heart, the diaphragm, the powerful motor of our body that allows us to breathe. So it addresses all forms of ailments that involve those organs, both infectious as well as cancerous. It's the full range of those disease spectrum.
Did you hear the sound bites of Niagara Falls being dammed up so that they can remove the boulders? Doesn't it sound familiar to what you do as a thoracic surgeon?
There is a similarity there. there's a great cacophony of sound and motion, and then when the business starts, everybody focuses, everybody becomes very intense.
And speaking of sound, so here's what Niagara Falls sounds like. So in 1983, I'm an intern. I know nothing. I'm right out of medical school. And they asked me to go see a patient on the floor at 2 o'clock in the morning. The nurse is nervous because the guy has been in the hospital for a week with back pain and he's in traction. I have no idea why, but I decided to take out my stethoscope for a guy on the orthopedic floor who's there for a week with back pain. But the guy was sweating. He was in pain. He could not get comfortable. So I took out my stethoscope and I put it over his belly. And this is what I heard. And I'm saying to myself, oh my God, this may not be orthopedics. It sounds like a waterfall inside there. I was listening to a brewery of an aortic aneurysm and called the vascular surgeon. Boom, boom, boom. He's in surgery. And sure enough, do you remember a guy named Bud Ferran? I don't know how long you've been at Cedars, but I'm the lowly intern. He's the big shot vascular surgeon. And I'll never forget when he went out after saving this man's life, the family couldn't thank him enough. And he said, don't thank me. Thank that intern who figured it out by hearing that. And yesterday in surgery, I was teaching the resident how much you have to use your hearing, your sense of feel to be a surgeon. It's not just what your eyes see. You have to have a feel about it, probably more so in your world when you take those fingers of yours and feel the flow through the arteries and the vein is such a big part of probably what you do as a surgeon, correct?
It's very much so, particularly in this case when a patient truly does have thoracic outlet syndrome, there is an impingement between the collarbone or clavicle and the first rib that narrows the canal that those blood vessels must traverse to get to the shoulder and arms. And when dealing with that surgically, we have to put our finger between the blood vessel, shield it from our surgical instruments while we're trying to remove the underlying first rib. And so there's a very intimate and delicate touch and feel that you must have with that blood vessel while you shield it from the instruments. So,
Clark, how many years have you been in practice?
I completed residency in 1997, so I'd rather say that than the number of years.
Because those fingers of yours and what you can feel after all of these years is better than any ultrasound, any MRI, any testing that we can do is to know when it's right. And that's the beauty of us In my case, no hair on top of my head. In your case, gray hair on top of your head. But that's the greatest part about growing old in the medical profession, because what's in those fingers of yours, what's in those ears of yours to listen, it ain't in the book. There's a sixth sense. Listen, I want to ask you about the future of what you do, but I want to pay some bills. Can you hang on a second? I want to do a second segment with you and ask you about the technical advances that you've been a part of in the world of thoracic surgery. Can you hang on?
You bet, Dr. Clark.
Okay, my pleasure. We're talking to the great Dr. Clark Fuller, one of the best thoracic surgeons. It's not orthopedics. It's not what I do, but it's so much fun for me to talk to a plumber because I'm a carpenter. You're listening to the Weekend Warriors Show, the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN. We'll keep on turning. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. I'm joined today by the great Dr. Clark Fuller, a thoracic surgeon, which is what was needed to save the career of Brandon Ingram, the baby Laker who's now an all-star in New Orleans. He had what's known as thoracic outlet syndrome. The main artery going down his arm, the subclavian artery, gets pinched by the first rib and the clavicle, and he wound up with pain, a blood clot, and couldn't lift his arm above his head. Dr. Fuller, tell us a little bit about, I mean, take us through it. He's lying on the table, he's intubated, he's got anesthesia. What exactly do you do? You take a scalpel, you make a skin incision. What do you do? Take us through a surgery that Brandon Ingram had.
You're absolutely correct. It begins with the induction of general anesthesia. We have an appropriate position of the patient, which puts the arm in a neutral, non-flexed or non, the arm is kept parallel to the body. We make a very small incision, interestingly, inside the chest cavity for a small camera. Looks like a long soda straw with a camera and light at the end of it. That from the inside of the chest cavity, we're able to accurately identify exactly where the first rib is. Hmm. It's a very short, broad rib that makes it very, it looks almost like the letter C. Hmm. And once we identify that, we make a counter incision on the skin way up high, up underneath the arm. And through that, I introduce my index finger and identify visually as well as by feel the first rib. I feel the vessels that are roaming over it on the top part of my finger, and by identifying where it is, I'm then able to introduce instruments through that incision that allow us to isolate the rib at both where it begins on the vertebral body and where it connects to the breastbone up front, and we remove it, the whole time shielding the vessels and the important nerves that run in that area.
Do you use a power tool, a saw? Do you use a giggly saw? How exactly do you use tools where you have to protect the nerve and the artery from damage, and yet you have to remove a piece of bone?
Yeah. Well, we use a combination of tools. It's one is like a planer, like you use on wood. It's called an elevator, which means that it elevates the soft tissues away from the bone. So the attaching musculature and sinews of the region are elevated or pushed away from the bone. And then the actual bone where it joins the spine or the breastbone up front is divided with an instrument that allows us to chew through the bone. Divide it. So there's not an introduction of a saw necessarily, but a long instrument that allows us to divide the bone.
Wow, that's incredible. And are you feeling the flow through the vessel where on the one hand you lift the arm up, it kinks off, there's no flow, and now you've done your surgery and you feel the flow return mimicking that same maneuver?
That is absolutely correct. You can, you know, when you pull the arm away from the body, much like Brandon described, the pulse down on the side of the arm by his thumb will disappear, just like Niagara Falls. And then when you restore that blood flow, you'll feel that pulse return. And that's how we know that there's been an adequate resection of that first rib.
That's just awesome. So tell us what you've been involved with in terms of your field over these couple of decades advancing. Is it in the way to see what you're doing? Is it the way to cut the bone? Is it the way to clamp the vessels? What is it that's amazed you most that you've been a part of in advancing the field of thoracic surgery?
What's really revolutionized, and that word gets overused, but it truly has, is the whole transition from what we call traditional open surgery, where incisions and entrance into a cavity is made through a large incision to afford us the exposure or allow us to see the things that we need to operate on. That has changed, as in your field as well as ours, that we've been able to put a light and a camera at the end of a small tube and transmit that onto these wonderful high definition TV screens. So what we see surgically now is marvelous. The whole field of arthroscopy, or in chest surgery, it's called thoracoscopy. And being able to do that has allowed us to approach the same disease process with the same principles, not violating those, but achieve this similar result with a much different type of skin incision, affording patients recovery, whether it's to deal with thoracic outlet or with tumors of the lung or infection, whatever the ailment may be, rather than having to approach it with an open. Now, at least 95% of the cases I do are all done now with smaller incisions and the TV camera. Kind of an advancement upon that advancement is the era of robotics, which puts the instruments in the surgeon's hands, and I'm no longer at the bedside. I'm 10 to 12 feet away, sitting at a giant viewfinder.
Jesus. Incredible. Before I let you go, one of the things that's most admirable about you as a busy surgeon, long hours, is your ability to balance your life and work with your family. You coach football. I know Donna told me that she'd be illustrating the front of the playbook and whatnot for you. What's the secret to that? Where did you get that ability to recognize that you've got to make time to balance your life?
I think I saw it growing up in my own parents, my own role models, in that regardless of the demands of rural life and ranch life, which is truly a 24/7 job, we carved out time as a family. My father was a very accomplished collegiate athlete at the University of Colorado in Boulder, and he would make time, whether it was basketball, football, baseball, track. I knew what season of the year it was, not only by, you know, what we were doing out in the fields, but also what I was doing on the court or baseball diamond. Fall was football, and winter was basketball, spring was baseball, summer was track. So there was a great template provided by my parents that way.
Well, I'm proud to call you a colleague. This is why I love being at Cedars, because it's just a building, but it's populated by people like you, and I want to thank you so much for enlightening us this morning, getting up early to be with us. It's a true pleasure.
Dr. Clapper, it was my pleasure, and please, when you sign up on that segment, I want to hear ZZ Top.
Yeah, from Cody, Wyoming. All right, God bless you. Have a great day today. The great Dr. Clark Fuller, thanks so much for joining us. All right, Warriors, coming up next, I'm going to do some clap revision. The number is 877-710-ESPN. But let's talk about coronavirus. How do you wrap your head around what exactly it is? What's a virus? Why is it different than a bacteria? And I'll explain with some clap revision coming up next on the Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. You're listening to ZZ Top. Why are we playing ZZ Top? Because we do whatever Dr. Clark Fuller tells us to do. And that is for him. What a pleasure. What a gentleman. This week, the coronavirus. One of the fallouts, no sports, no nothing, is that the schools are now closed. And did you know, at my hospital, where I was working yesterday, where I continue to work, where Dr. Fuller continues to work, we need blood. Guess where the blood comes from to fill up the blood bank? It comes from high schools that have blood drives. But if you ain't going to high school, you ain't having a blood drive. So I want you all to do me a favor, yourself, your friends, your family. If ever there was a time, come to Cedars, go to the blood bank, South Tower. Tell them Dr. Clapper sent you. And I have a surprise for you. Bring your phone, which has a camera, because in the blood bank at Cedars, you're going to be able to see, touch, and take a picture of a sculpture I made. You hear me talk about how I go to Italy to Michelangelo's quarry, and my passion is art. But it's not just appreciating art, which I love sharing with you every Saturday. I'm a sculptor. I tell people I work in stone and bone. But you'll see a sculpture I made. It's about a 600-pound block of stone right there in the blood bank in the waiting room of a man in a dream. His eyes are closed and one eyebrow is lifted. You can almost feel the air going through his lips. It's a rock, but you can see someone sleeping, dreaming. It's one of the coolest ones I've done, and there it is. There's another sculpture of mine up on the seventh floor, on the orthopedic floor, that I made of my dad. But I want you to go and donate blood. We need it. And tell him Dr. Clapper sent you. After surgery this week on Wednesday, I decided to give myself a treat. So I decided I'm in search of, I just wanted to have a cheeseburger. That's fine. And the best cheeseburger in LA happens to also have my favorite, one of my favorite desserts in Los Angeles. Do you know what a boysenberry is? You all know what apple pie is, peach pie. They're great. Fruit pies, love them. Cherry pie. But you haven't lived unless you've had boysenberry. What exactly even is a boysenberry? This is what's so cool about Southern California and Los Angeles. A boysenberry comes from Southern California. That's where it was invented. In 1920, in Anaheim, California, Rudolph Boysen decided that he was going to mix up a blackberry, a raspberry, a whole bunch of berries. He was a berry grower. And he went out of business. But before he went out of business, he made it known that he concocted this berry. And then he sold his farm and that was the end of it. Well, the head of the USDA in Washington heard about this new berry that Rudolph Boysen had put together. So he contacts the smartest berry guy that he knows. Darrow did. And that is Walter Knott from Knott's Berry Farm. He called him, Walter. You know this guy named Boysen? And Knott said, I've heard of him, but I don't think he's in the berry business anymore. So the two of them schlep over to the abandoned berry farm of Rudolph Boysen. And there, off into the corner with weeds growing all around it, is a bush of these cool, reddish, big as a blackberry berries. And so they took this bush, they brought it to Buena Park. Everything's on the 10 freeway, I'm sure. This is when a New Yorker from Far Rockaway tries to describe something out here. Anyway, they end up taking this bush with the weeds, they rescue it and bring it to Knott's farm in Buena Park, and they grow it, and it generates these berries. And in 1932, Knott is now selling more of these berries than blackberries or raspberries or strawberries. And someone once asked him, what kind of berry is this? Because we can't get enough of them. And God bless Walter Knott. Just like that story I told you about the vascular surgeon saying, don't give me the credit for saving your dad's life. It's that young intern. And it was me. It was one of the great moments in my medical career involving thoracic vascular surgery because I heard what Niagara Falls sounds like. When I put my stethoscope on this man with back pain on the orthopedic floor and diagnosed an aneurysm that was bursting. And he saved his life. And he said, thank that young guy. Well, Walter Knott, instead of saying, yep, this is my berry, he said, no, This is from Rudolf Boysen's farm. He created this, and it was thus called a boysenberry. Now, where are you going to get the greatest homemade whipped cream to put on top of your slice of boysenberry pie? Where are you going to get the crust where when they make flaky pastry crust, nobody does it better than these guys? Because the secret, I learned this from the Barefoot Contessa, the secret to making flaky, amazing pie crust is that when you combine the flour with the butter, like you would do to make any kind of dough, you're supposed to use almost ice-cold butter. Even though it doesn't break down, it stays as marbles, if you will, of butter as you mix it with the flour. But because it's so cold and it stays like pebbles and rocks, the butter, when you then go and bake the dough, the butter, because it was so cold, creates air pockets. And that's what makes the flakiness to the crust. Where are you going to get the flakiest crust ever in a pie with the greatest whipped cream on boysenberries? Oh, my God. And the cup of coffee that comes with it comes in a cup that's from 1947. I'm not kidding. And when you ask, yes, I'll have cream and sugar, you know what kind of cream they give you? Triple thick whipping cream.
Absolutely.
You pour this into that cup of coffee, and it becomes like liquid coffee ice cream. I had this after my phenomenal cheeseburger and french fries. I shouldn't be having it because I'm going to drop dead here. I hope Steve Paulette knows how to do CPR because I'm 62. I shouldn't be eating this stuff. But it's the greatest slice of pie you're ever going to have because it's boysenberry with the flaky crust, with the whipped cream, with this cup of coffee that's from heaven. Where is this place, you may be asking? I'm going to have to tell you in the next hour.
Dr. Clapper.
Because you need to change your life. With all this craziness going on, you need to go have a slice of boysenberry pie that comes from Buena Park. Actually, New Zealand now generates the most boysenberries, but and Oregon as well. But it all started with Rudolf Boysen in Anaheim, California. Love it. I'll tell you where to get this slice, by the way. Ugh, my mouth is watering already. Coming up next, we'll do some stories. Stories about manipulating flow from Kobe passing to Shaq doing an alley-oop to Niagara Falls to the saving of Brandon Ingram's career with thoracic surgery for thoracic outlet syndrome. Only on this show can you connect all these dots. That's why I appreciate you listening each and every Saturday. Me and Steve Paulette. Love it. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN.